Welcome back. Thanks so much for joining me this afternoon. I'm your guest host, Deb Hutton, and I am now joined by three of our smartest speakers for our Smart Speakers segment this afternoon. Bruce Arthur, Toronto Star columnist, Genevieve Tomney, principal at GT&Co, and Karen Stintz, former city councillor and TTC chair, currently the president and CEO of Variety Village, and a federal conservative candidate. Speaking of federal politics, we learned earlier this week that one of Canada's major banks is refusing to change the labeling on the federal government's carbon rebate when they're directly depositing it into their customers' account. The new name, as you may recall, the government made some changes to update its communications around its carbon rebate, is the Canada Carbon Rebate. Couple of the banks already adopted it. A couple said they couldn't do it in time for this most recent round, but they're working on it. And CIBC said that they just call it Deposit Canada. In other words, to let you know that it is money coming from the federal bank. So the feds now say that they're actually going to change the legislation to force banks to use the term they want, the Canada Carbon Rebate, when depositing that rebate into their accounts. Bruce Arthur, I'm going to start with you. It seems like a bit of overkill to me, or not?
Yeah, I mean, if you were going to do this, you could have done this when you did this the first time, right? Like, one of the problems with the carbon tax has been that this federal government just assumed people would understand it and they wouldn't have to explain it more than once. And therefore, the comms on this have been messed up from the beginning. And that's why right now, one of the reasons right now, why there's a huge groundswell against it. And so, you probably should have done this the first time. I'm not a huge fan of updating the legislation so you can have better comms, guys.
Yeah, I mean, let's speak to one of our comms folks. Genevieve, what do you think about this? To me, as I said, it feels heavy-handed and it feels like they're forcing the banks to clean up one of their mistakes.
Yeah, and clearly this is also part of the comms strategy on this, right? Do something that is going to make a bit of a splash, get some media coverage, get us talking about it so that once again, we're talking about the Canada Carbon Rebate and how that money is getting into your bank account on a regular basis. But like, look, yes, it's not the identifier on your bank account. It is the millions of dollars that the Conservative Party of Canada has been spending on Axe the Tax ads and merchandise as they have really effectively framed this issue and made it nearly impossible for the Liberals to do anything but exactly what they're doing about it. I will say that I think the federal budget this week has been really effective of kind of trying to knock them off that track, because suddenly there's this new tax to talk about, but it's a really niche and targeted tax that's impacting, you know, the wealthiest, tiny, minuscule percentage of Canadians. So, you know, obviously Team Poilievre is going to be really super careful about not drifting from his core messaging and staying on this. But we've started to hear, you know, the business community, doctors, even Premier Ford in Ontario, all starting to complain about this new budget measure. And from a comms perspective, that's exactly what the Liberal government wants right now.
Man, I'd like to push back on that, but I'll give Karen Stintz an opportunity. Go, Karen.
Oh, where does one begin? No, the problem with the carbon tax is that the reason people don't understand it is because it doesn't make any sense. And, you know, the fact that you would get more money than you would pay in an attempt to change your behavior is a bit of a curious position to begin with. And I don't think it's the bank's responsibility to market a failed campaign of the federal government. And I think it's an act of desperation to then legislate banks to do what they have been unable to do. So I do hope that they pull that one back, and because it's not going to help anyway. So it's just, you know, again, one more measure of, you know, trying to make sense of something that doesn't make sense, and then, you know, pointing the blame at those who don't want to do the government's bidding. So I think it would be a failed policy.
Coming up after the 5 o'clock break for news, I think I'm going to go to our listeners and get your perspective, just as was shared by our smart speakers on this issue, whether this is a heavy-handed move on the part of the government or whether the banks are really at fault with not sort of falling into line and becoming what some might think was a bit political on this. Speaking of politics, Brian Lilly in the Toronto Sun has an interesting column about the week that was for Premier Doug Ford. He says it's been a bad week. He needs to take some time off. He needs to get a rest. He starts with the premier's government doing a bit of a reversal on the schedule for the UP Express, which goes from Union Station up to Pearson Airport. He then talks about the premier wading in on issues of the Middle East, specifically on the issue of the speaker making a decision not to allow the cafe in the Ontario legislature. And then he says he also on Thursday came out against a piece of legislation that insists that universities in this province have anti-racism policies in place to avoid some of the challenges and some of the positions that we have seen as very divisive as a result of October 7th and time since then. Your thoughts, Bruce Arthur, on all of that? Is it really a bad week for the premier overall?
Well, I think it's probably stretches out a little further than a bad week, because like the reversals on stuff like the UP Express issue was so obviously a bad move. Like it was the kind of thing where if you talked to people for 5 minutes who use the UP Express to get from the west side of the city downtown, you would have gone, oh, maybe we shouldn't cut off or at least greatly diminish a huge part of public transit in a city that's starved for public transit still to this day. But the fact that that reversal happened so fast, and the fact that we've seen it so many times, the fact that this Ford government has over and over and over again made policy and then run from it, the Greenbelt being probably the best example, it just speaks to me to a government that doesn't really know what it's doing. And so, yeah, this week wasn't fabulous for Doug. I thought he actually showed some leadership in saying that the speaker should not ban the cafe in Queen's Park. But other than that, I just don't think Doug's on a great run over a very long period at this stage.
Jen, your thoughts on this? I mean, the numbers still hold for him in the polls. Mm-hmm. So, again, what do you think about this, the week that was for Doug Ford?
Yeah, I mean, when I look at just the past week, I think Bruce hit on a really important piece there, because here's the thing. When you know exactly who you're fighting for, it makes it a lot easier to make the right decision the first time around. And I think that's where the premier has lost his way. He's no longer acting with a clear focus on the best interests of the people in Ontario. That's not at the front of his mind. And so it's become this erratic, chaotic process of decision-making and then reversal. And here's the thing, it's not inspiring confidence for the people who are impacted by these decisions. So you think about all those people who are like, what the heck is going on with the UP Express? But it's also clearly causing a ruckus inside his own caucus. And that, you know, has the potential to lead to more bad weeks when things start to feel really disrupted and chaotic.
Karen Stintz.
Yeah, I mean, I would point to the by-election in Milton as having an impact on how this week's, announcements and reversals played out. And I think that Ford is concerned. Not, I wouldn't say concerned. I don't want to overstate it, but I think that they want to win that by-election, and there's some dynamics in Milton that played themselves out on the front pages of the paper this week. So I don't think it's a sense that he doesn't know who he's fighting for or that he's lost his way. I think he's just consumed by issues that he normally wouldn't be consumed by.
Do you think you'll see some changes in the polls? Because as I said, they've really maintained their lead over both the Liberals and the NDP.
Yeah, no, I don't, because again, this is not out of character for Ford, right? Like he does reverse himself when he makes a mistake, and people think that's endearing. So if it was so out of character, maybe, but it's completely within character. And so I don't think it will. And given that Bonnie is still, I would say, a relatively unknown quantity in the province at large, that I don't think his numbers are going to change.
Bruce Arthur, Toronto Star columnist, Jen Tomney, principal of GT & Co., and Karen Stintz, former city councillor, TTC chair, and currently president and CEO of Variety Village, and a federal conservative candidate in the upcoming election, whenever that happens. Karen, I'm going to have to get a longer list to put all of your pieces in my document. They are our smart speakers. They're going to continue with us after the break. And we're going to ask about drivers blocking the intersection, blocking the box, and what we should do about it. Stay tuned. I'm Deb Hutton, your guest host this afternoon on The Rush on News Talk 1010. I don't know if that song is for our panel or not, but it's a fun one nonetheless on a Friday afternoon. I'm your guest host, Deb Hutton. Thanks so much for joining us. Also joining me this afternoon are Bruce Arthur, Toronto Star columnist, Genevieve Tomney, principal at GT & Co., and Karen Stintz, former city councillor and currently CEO of Variety Village and a candidate in the upcoming, whenever that may be, federal election campaign for the Conservatives. Asked this question of our listeners just a little while ago, guys, and that is, whether you avoid hitting an animal when you're driving at all costs. Do you swerve? Do you slam on the brakes? Or do you try to be a little more aware of whether or not you can do it safely? And that may mean hitting an animal. Our first caller, by the way, on the topic said he avoids hitting an animal at all costs. He stops, he swerves, he does whatever he can to avoid hitting an animal. Let's start with you, Bruce Arthur. What do you do?
There's a line. Like, my general rule is I don't want to run an animal over.
I think most of us are there, right?
The squirrel. I want to avoid the squirrel, the raccoon, the deer, whatever it is. But I'm not going to flip my car to do so. I think that's basically the people in my car are my number one priority. And then the animal is number two. I will say this. We have a place out in Prince Edward County, and there's a bird in Prince Edward County that's gray, perfectly pavement gray. I don't know what they're called. I call them death wish doves because they love to sit on the road at the end of the day when the road is still warm but cooling, and you cannot see them until they launch into the air at the very last second because they're very slow-witted and you're going to run right into them. I've had to swerve to avoid those doves. I've never killed one yet, but it's coming because at some point I'm not flipping my car to avoid a dove.
Jen Tobney.
Yeah, I think context is everything here, right? I was driving in the country a couple weeks ago, and we came up over, you know, the crest of a blind hill, and there were two, you know, beautiful big dogs standing in the middle of the road on a road where people are driving pretty fast. And, you know, within the next couple of cars, like myself and a car going in the opposite direction had stopped and like were flashing our lights and putting on four ways. And people were getting out of the car to try and like corral these dogs and get them off to the side because, you know, like you're going to do everything you can when you see somebody's beautiful, you know, family pet standing in the middle of the road versus, yeah, if it's a squirrel, you're going to try your best. But, you know, maybe you will, maybe you won't. That's my position.
Ah, so there's degrees for you, Jen. Karen Stintz, how about you?
I'm with Jen. There's a hierarchy. And, you know, nobody wants to go out and hit a squirrel or a raccoon. A skunk, maybe. I don't know. But
Then your car smells.
Then the car smells. But, you know, like, again, I wouldn't slam on the brakes or swerve or do anything erratic for a squirrel. But for a cat or a dog or a deer or a moose, you know, I would certainly do my level best, especially a moose, because it's usually, I mean, it's never a good outcome for anybody in that situation. But it, I agree, it is contextual.
Deb, I have one addition to this, and it's a little bit dark.
Okay, go for it.
I have seen at least once or twice, I've seen a squirrel on the road that was run over a little bit by the car in front of me. Isn't dead. So what do you do then?
And you keep driving, Bruce.
The humane thing to do is to put that animal out of its misery.
100%.
I have at least once or twice done.
I am with you on that, Bruce, for sure. And I said we'd lighten it up on a Friday afternoon here on The Rush. I'm going to stick with driving for a second. I'll go back to you on this, Bruce. Is it time in the city of Toronto for us to have automated ticketing machines, automated fines at intersections to pick up drivers who are blocking the box?
This is one of those things that we shouldn't have to do this, people. Like, it isn't that hard to not get stranded in an intersection. It just requires a little bit more patience, a little bit more patience. And so often, because traffic's so bad, people jam themselves in because then they hold their place in line. And it mucks up things for everybody else. It is a simple matter of consideration. And if we've gotten to the point where we need automated ticketing for this, We need to do better, people. Come on, let's all have a meeting. Let's all get together and talk this out, because this doesn't have to happen.
Jen, end the selfishness. That's what Bruce says.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would take it a step further back, and I'm interested to hear, you know, Karen's perspective on this as a former city councilor as well. Like, how did we get here? How is it so bad that this is actually, you know, worthy of people writing articles about? Because people blocking intersections has created such a disruption to the flow of, you know, the abominable traffic in the city. I live in the East End, and of course we know that the ramp from the East End of Lakeshore onto the Gardiner was taken down. And I had my parents visiting here from New Brunswick, and we were stuck in traffic trying to get downtown. And I'm talking to my dad about it, and he said, well, when they fix it, it'll be better when they rebuild it. And I said, no, this is how it's going to be. This is the path forward. And he said, how can that possibly be? How is that the solution? How is this going to be how it is going forward? And so I think, you know, obviously there are a myriad different remedies. There's, you know, better transit, more cycling, getting people out of their cars. But if, you know, if the solution has become so downstream that it's, you know, a ticket booth, I just think we've lost the plot.
So I'd love to agree, Karen, with Jen and Bruce, but I see this every single day. I drive from Yonge and Lawrence to the station on Richmond every day without fail.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think it's more symptomatic of the fact that our road network is failing. Because, I mean, you can literally be at a light, at a green light, and not move through it if you really don't want to block the intersection, because you don't know if you're going to be able to make it, because the lights aren't synchronized, the roads are under construction, there's we've reduced capacity on our roads for bike lanes, and so, you know, you try to get around town, and then, you know, suddenly your lane ends, and you're trying to get into the next lane, and people aren't letting you in, and so all kinds of stuff is happening, because fundamentally, our road network is not coping with the capacity that it needs to serve. And that's why we've got these failures at intersections. And so it is annoying and it is frustrating, but I think it's not just a reflection of people not being, you know, part of it is that they're not being considerate, but the other part of it is we have a problem right now.
I'm going to try in our last minute and a half here to lighten things up. Bruce Arthur, Tom Selleck, at the age of 79, has never emailed, never texted in his life. Do you wish you were him?
I'll say this. I don't agree that Tom Selleck was a board member of the NRA for as many years as he was and a spokesman for gun-ins in America. And I still, because I have no other reason to dislike him, see him as Magnum PI in my mind. And Magnum didn't text. You're darn right Magnum didn't email. He is frozen in time, and there's something beautiful to that.
Jen.
I'm calling his bluff on it. I don't believe it. How is it possible? Like, I'm pretty sure Tom Selleck has children, possibly grandchildren. How is it possible that this is a person who has never texted or emailed a day in his life? I'm calling Gwyneth Paltrow Goop. I don't believe you on Tom Selleck today.
Karen, I got 30 seconds. He says his wife has sent the odd text on his behalf and he has an assistant. So it is possible. Do you wish
you were
a little bit more like him?
For sure. If I had all the support people that he had managing my life, I probably wouldn't have to text either. And it might, you know, it might be a dream, but that's not the world I live in. And you know what? I'll actually take the problems I have versus the problems he has, because I'm sure he has his own.
Bruce Arthur, Jen Tomney, Karen Stintz, thanks so much for joining me. Have a great weekend to all of you. Coming up after the break, we are going to take your calls on the carbon tax labeling fiasco, the banks versus the government of Canada. This is Deb Hutton. You're listening to The Rush.